Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to this Cricket Badger India vs England daily podcast by the fans for the fans. Virat Kohli's India, with Rohit Sharma, Jasprit Bumrah and Ravi Ashwin, and young starlets like Rishabh Pant and Shubman Gill. They play host to Joe Root's England, with Jimmy Anderson, Ben Stokes, Stuart Broad and young talents like Ollie Pope and Zach Crawley. It's always England's toughest tour. Good luck to both sides. May the best team win.
Hello everybody, welcome along. It's another edition of the Test Match Daily, and we thought we'd be talking about cricket today. Well, we are going to be talking about cricket, but not the actual play on the park, because that finished yesterday with India winning the third Test Match by 10 wickets. Plenty of fallout from that Test Match, loads of people having their say on the pitch in various things, and we're going to do that again today, with the pitch being the podcast today. Plenty of chat about it, plenty of talk from me as well on Twitter, and I was a little bit dismayed. It's been one of the features of this series. I love Indian cricket, I love Indian fans, but the tweets that I've been getting saying stop crying, stop whinging, rather than actually entering into a proper debate, started to annoy me a little bit really. And therefore I was absolutely delighted when I received an email which was criticising what I was saying, but it was from Kush, who actually took the time to sit down, write an email headed English Sensibilities, which is fine. I'm happy to enter into the debate, and we'll talk about that with Naman, Neil and Nakul today. First of all though, gents, I'll read Cushy's email out. We'll take it from there. He says, "Hi, James. I've really enjoyed your podcast since lockdown. Thanks for all of your work. Pleasure. I have been compelled to write this after listening to your podcasts following the day-night test. I don't disagree with the premise that a two-day test isn't a great advert for the longer form, but your insistence that it's all down to the pitch frankly tells me that it's jarring to the sensibilities to you and the vast majority of the English media. There is quite clearly an unconscious bias that pervades when you see something that doesn't compute with what you're accustomed to. We started seeing evidence of this in the test last year, even though this lasted 4 days and one batsman scored 160 runs. This really needs, I think when he says last year, I think he means the last test match. This really needs examining. You used the example of how India batted to prove your point." This is his number one point. This is quite a long email, but I'll get through it as quickly as I can. "If you look at the Indian innings, only Washington was completely bamboozled. You can't make statements like you do without examining further. Gill, Rohit, Kohli, Rahane, Pant all played poor shots. Ashwin was going for runs with the tail, as was Axar. The rest were tail enders. If Root takes 5 wickets, then that proves my point. Again, James, you'd expect more from you. Look at this, his wickets as described above. All barring 1 wicket were poor shots for the batsman going for aggression, and they were tail enders. If Cook and Strauss say it, well, it must be true," he says as his third point. "Clearly, their opinion is valued, but sitting 5,000 miles away in a studio, you didn't mention that other pundits and legends batting said, i.e. Gavaskar and Peterson. The fact is, James, both teams didn't bat well enough. England worse than India. I wonder what the reaction would have been had England scored 200 in their first innings and won the match within 3 days. I'll guarantee there would be little talk of the pitch, rather how good the performance was. I'm actually quite tired of media pundits, fans, when it comes to England touring the subcontinent. It seems to bring out something quite unsavoury and a little sinister. How many times do we hear, win the toss, win the match, yet England won the toss and lost? The last tour of India, England won all the tosses and lost 4-0. India lost every toss in Australia and won. The other narrative I saw in the last two matches was the quality of the umpiring. Again, I find this a little sinister. Was the umpiring in the last English summer any good? Take a look, he says. I'm by no means calling Ben Stokes a cheat, but imagine that catch was taken by Coley at Headingley. All round booing and accusations of cheating, I'll bet. There's more, but that'll do for now, says Cush. James, I hope you take this in the spirit that it is written and understand where it's coming from. Would love to talk and or contribute to further discussion. I definitely think it's worth exploring. Keep up the good work, James. Cush, I am more than happy, as I say, to get an email like that. Well thought out, well reasoned, and you are entitled to your opinions, and of course you are. And we'll go through some of those opinions in this podcast today. Knuckle, bring you in first here. I guess your first impressions of Cush's email, really.
It's an interesting one. I mean, I do think that there is a point worth discussing about, and I wrote actually this before this test match in response to some of the positions regarding the last test match. There's definitely something to respond to in terms of how the conception of what is a good pitch has been heavily influenced by the fact that for the first 100 plus years of Test cricket and international cricket, it was dominated and controlled by England and Australia. England and Australia had a veto at the Imperial Cricket Conference, as was, and their cultural mores and cultural attitudes based on environmental conditions and based on certainly the initial development of the sport as an imperial and expressly imperial sport, those do play a factor. Mel Farrell summed this up quite nicely when she just asked the question about language. You know, we use the word rank Turner. Rank is a word you use to describe something that is nasty and unhealthy, and it's a word best said with a sneer. We don't use quite such pejorative terms when we're talking about excessively seeming
I was thinking, Knuckle, if there'd been a similar... I think this pitch in Ahmedabad, I thought it was poor. I'm not going to change because Cush has basically brought up what he said. We'll go through some of his points in a second, but I still stand by the fact I thought it was not of test match standard. And I appreciate what Cush is saying, that some of the shots were poor, but you're going to get that in every single test match. Even when a team gets 700, there'll be somebody that gets naught with a poor shot. You're going to get that. And the insistence that people have got out with straight balls, well, that is still an attacker spinner uses. If they're turning a few square and then one goes straight, that's as big a weapon for a spinner as anything else. So the straight ball argument, I don't get either. But the thing that I wanted to pick up from what you've just said there is that if a spinning track is spinning massively, we do get on our high horse a little bit. If it was the same with a pacey track and it was coming through at 110 miles an hour and the bowlers were getting every assistance out of the surface and making the batsman jump around, we'd be on the edge of our seats saying this is gripping cricket, wouldn't we?
Yeah, for sure. I want to go into actually bring up the ICC's guidance for how pitches are rated. So in terms of a pitch can only be rated unfit if it's dangerous. This pitch wasn't dangerous. But throughout, there's a lot of talk of excessive turn. Excessive assistance to spin bowlers, especially early in the match, is one of the criteria by which a pitch can be judged as poor. I mean, that's also true of excessive seam movement and excessive unevenness of bounce, or indeed a pitch that offers little or no seam movement with no significant bounce or carry, which I think is the worst possible sin for any pitch, is a dead pitch. I don't want all pitches to be like anything. I think it's important that there is some variation. And
our variety is the spice of life, and the same applies to pitches and test matches. We don't want everything to be the same, do we?
No, absolutely not. I would much rather have a pitch be doing too much than too little. But I want to go further up. A pitch can be judged as very good if, and I'm quoting here from the regulations, it has good carry, limited seam movement and consistent bounce throughout, little or no turn on the first 2 days. That's in the regulations. That's built into the regulations that if a pitch turns moderately to a lot on the first 2 days, it cannot be judged as very good.
And I think that's why it's important to read that out, because any Indian fan who's saying that pitch is fine, and I did a poll on Twitter this morning or last night, asked the Twitter followers to say, was it perfect, average, poor or substandard or something along those lines? And people were saying they thought it was perfect. That pitch was not perfect, because if you get excessive turn on days 1 and 2, it goes against those ICC regulations, Knuckle.
Yeah, I do. I do think that. And But I find it interesting that it is automatically assumed as a bad thing if the ball is turning significantly or even moderately on the first 2 days. My personal reading of this pitch is actually, I don't know if there was, if you can say excessive seam move, spin move, bowl, excessive turn, given how many deliveries were skidding on. And obviously that actually does make it harder for the batters in many ways if there is that variation.
There's a rat in the kitchen, what am I gonna do? There's a rat in the kitchen, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna get a black rat, cricket bat. Hey, rat fans! The best kit available to maximise those scoring opportunities from blackratcricket.com. Bats made by cricketers for cricketers. Make 2021 count with Black Rat Cricket. Let's bring Neil in and get his assessment on it. Neil, I describe the pitch during the 2 days as being a bit like watching your best mate playing Russian roulette, because there's like six balls in an over, six potential bullets in a gun. You're watching the England batsmen trying to just fend off this spin, thinking they could be out any single ball that comes along, Neil. And that to me, when you've got, I mean, Kush mentions the Cook and Strauss comments about how they would bat on that track, and they're saying they don't know how they would cope with it, because to get 20 or 30, in their opinion, you needed a lot of luck. That isn't a good test match wicket, Neil, is it?
I think that says a lot more about the ingrained attitudes to test cricket. Also, going back to Knuckles' point, I'd ask who wrote those regulations for the pitches where even moderate spin movement...
Well, I've got nothing against spin on the first day. That's not a problem to me. If it's kind of gentle, slow spin, that's not an issue. But it's in those ICC regulations. I take your point, yeah.
That's the question. We're talking about a game which has been ruled and attitudes dominated by an Anglo and Australian-centric viewpoint on how the game should be played. I think one thing which also...
Should the game be played with big turn on day one, though, and all out in two days? That's surely going the extreme the other way, isn't it?
I think the 2 days is actually well described by you as Russian roulette, because that's exactly how the majority of the English players approach this.
And the Indians, to be fair.
The Indians got out to some very, very poor shots, which, if you look at them, there was more batsman error than actually the ball that doing wondrous tricks there.
You could say the same with most of the England dismissals. I mean, we talk about the straight ball. I mean, Johnny Bairstow just played all around one with massive, great big gate. You know, there weren't great shots from the England players either, were they?
Johnny Bairstow had possibly, for a guy who's come back into the test team after getting consistently bowled for 2 years, gets back in the test team on the basis of his great play against spinning white ball, to be given out three times in against the three balls of spin that you face is a pretty poor show. I'm going to go back to the ECB on this. English players these days play against the red ball in April, May, and September.
Yeah, I'm sure Knuckles' written pieces, I've written pieces about the fact that the county championship has been bookends the season, doesn't it? And how do we expect to get quality spinners coming through, and how do we expect to get people adept at playing spin when they're playing the majority of their cricket on seaming tracks in April and May? That doesn't work. The point that I came back with yesterday is that, do England really care about that, or do the powers that be really care about that? Because it's one away tour every 4 years. When they get humiliated, 3 months' time, they'll have forgotten about it.
There's a large part of deflection in it. One thing which I don't think got mentioned, with it being the first pink ball Asian match in these conditions, because the previous Indian one was in November in Calcutta, where there was a lot more swing assistance, is that the pink ball has extra layers of lacquer applied to keep it visible during the evening session.
So it's heavier.
We talked in the previous match about how much easier it was to face the spinning red ball after 30 overs when the ball got softer and it wasn't doing as much off the pitch. I think Rohit Sharma showed that particularly well. Now, with the pink ball having that extra lacquer, it's going to stay harder for longer. Did anyone actually make it through to the ball softening and getting a giving themselves a chance
My take on that deal was that I think in all innings, apart from maybe England's second when they were just pitiful, I thought in all of the innings that we saw, including India's charge to victory, we saw it easier at the start. I mean, I know in the first couple of the innings, they used Paceman, and I think Pace didn't have any impact on that surface whatsoever. And Rohit got off to a great start. Zach Crawley got off to a great start. But even in India's innings, it probably took the ball to get a little bit older before the spinners actually got a little bit more out of the track off it, I think. And we saw the same with when India were bowling. I don't think the early parts of the innings when Rohit and Zach Crawley in particular prospered a little bit more was when the ball was harder than you.
I'd argue against that, actually. As far as India's second innings go, it was, what, about 8 overs old? I don't think we can take anything from that.
But it was still a new ball, wasn't it?
It was a new ball, but I don't think we can say that it was easier or harder.
It mirrored the three previous innings, apart from the fact that Zach Crawley, Sibley and Bairstow played appalling shots in their innings. I think that it was easier to bat against the harder ball than it was when it got a little bit older.
When India batted the first time round, I thought Anderson and Broad bowled very defensively. They didn't go for wickets. And
I mean, Jerry kept them on far too long, didn't he? But I mean, the bottom line was that India got to, was it 94 for 2 at one stage?
Yeah, it was Kohli and Rohit batting together. I think there were 34 for 2 at one stage. And then you've got Kohli and Rohit, who are excellent, and the more attacking options of Archer and Leach naturally also leaked a few runs. But Anderson, Broad were very defensive. The batsmen could just leave pretty much everything that they bowled. I think they bowled...
It made a mockery of England's selection of playing an extra seamer, because the seamer's got nothing really from that track. The proof's in the pudding on how many wickets the seamers took in the test match. I mean, going back to Cushy's point that he made in the email, he says, the fact is, James, both teams didn't bat well enough. England worse than India. Now, man, I totally agree with Cush on that. India didn't bat that well on it. England batted terribly on it. I think it was one of the worst batting performances from England I've seen for a long, long time. But it doesn't necessarily... That's a different argument, is it, to whether the pitch was actually good or not. You can say teams didn't bat very well, but even in other test matches when teams don't bat very well, at least it creeps into day 3 and often into day 4, as Chennai did really, when England didn't bat very well. It doesn't get past the fact that the surface, I thought, was poor, Naman.
To be honest, James, we have already admitted that India has not played well, not only in this test match, even in the first test match and the second test match. India has still yet to perform what they are capable of. Once the ball have turned, India has not proved what they are capable of yet. What my exactly point was, considering this surface also, even if we are considering Joe Root's 5-4, you saw how Rishabh Pant played, and it was just middle of the ball, and yes, Root, the wicketkeeper, Folks caught the ball. It was not that the ball turned and it went to the second or the third slip. Even if you consider Sundar's wicket of Joe Root, it was just the off stump dismantled. So it was not that the massive turn was there and there were 2 to 3.
But you don't need massive. I mean, Naman, you've seen enough spin bowling. You don't need massive turn to get a batsman out. It's a little bit like swing bowling. When it's hooping and it's moving 3 yards in the air, that doesn't very rarely get a batsman out. It's when it moves half the bat width that you take the edge, isn't it? You don't need massive turn to bamboozle a batsman, you just need regular turn.
Yeah, that is what my exactly point is, that the wickets of Sundar and Pant was not excessive turn. It was just a normal turning from the middle and going to the keepers. It's just a normal off-spinner wicket. I just don't know what excessive turn out was there.
But there was excessive turn. There was excessive turn on display. The excessive turn didn't necessarily take the wickets, but the excessive turn stuck that seed of doubt in the batsman's head that they weren't quite sure what they were looking for. Is this ball going to come straight down, kick on and take my middle stump and come straight to me? Is this ball going to turn excessively and beat the outside edge? Or is it going to be a gentle turn? They couldn't actually work it out. And that was what was putting all the seeds of doubt in the mind. And that was what was leading to the wickets. The straight balls were taking wickets because that doubt was there, Naman.
That's what my point exactly is, James. This is the challenge, what I am looking forward to. Because if I consider myself as a batsman, it happens the same when it swings the ball. If it's not always the batsman predicts that this is going to be in-swinger or out-swinger or straight ball, but the batsmen are challenging themselves and they have faced Anderson, the likes of Broads, and they are the best swinging bowlers. So this happens equally in the spin bowling. It was not that the Akshar Patel was bowling and the ball was staying. The 5 out of 6 deliveries were staying low and one was turning and going to the second or the third slip. You saw the first over itself, Zach Crawley got bowled. It was just a normal left-arm orthodox bowl. Second also, the base to tried to sweep. The third delivery was a similar...
But I totally take your point, Naman. There were examples of excessive turn though on that track as well. And that my point is that that was leading to those... what seemingly were tame dismissals. Cricket's a game played with balls. You've got to look after them in the field. Badgers are furry creatures. My friends at manscaped.com help you make sure it's neat and tidy down there. Oh, get rid of all that excess fur. Make sure that you're neat and tidy. Make sure everything's in the right order. Oh, I'm feeling all good now down in my set. Oh, manscaped.com. Maximum skin safe performance, compact design, advanced engineering, ceramic blade, waterproof. And it doesn't end there. Show you care by caring for your pair. Cleansers, revivers, preservers. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code Badger. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Get on there now. Snack, we'll bring you back in just to finish off this podcast. As Cush in his email suggests, you know, you look at Root's 5 for 8, there were poor shots that led to that. You look at a lot of the dismissals in India's innings, as Naman said, there were poor shots that led to that. But often in test matches, especially these short test matches where it is a little bit like Russian roulette, you're not quite sure when that bullet's going to come with your name on it. Batsmen are forced to play those poor shots because they think they might be out any time. So it's actually the good bowling, the excessive turn, the poor pitch that's leading to those poor shots. It's not an example of why wickets fell because the pitch wasn't bad. It's actually, I think, furthers the point that the pitch was poor because the batsmen were feeling they were having to play and take risks.
I mean, it might seem technical to hide behind the ICC regulations. I mean, I would probably cast this pitch as sort of below average, roughly in that. But I do think Neil's point about the pink ball is worth pointing out. We don't really know because we don't have the counterexample, but it may well have been the case that turn might have been more consistent and therefore easier to play with a red ball where it wasn't skidding on so much because of that extra lacquer on the pink ball. A lot of the bowlers, I think Akshar Patel and Joe Root both mentioned this, and Akshar adjusted really well. So he was bowling with the seam horizontal to the direction of travel, which meant that if the ball hit the seam, it was more likely to turn sharply. If it missed the seam, it was more likely to hit that very lacquered surface and skid on. There was a sort of a perfect storm of novelty that it was the first ever game at this test match at this stadium. And there's only been like 3 or 4, I think, T20 or List A domestic games here. So, and I'm not even sure if they were on this track. First time that a pink ball had been used on a pitch that was particularly helpful for spinners. And so the batters didn't have that to go on. They had no historical data to go on. And then there was a general collective sense of panic on both sides, pretty much almost as soon as Rohit Sharma got out, really. Zach Crawley and Rohit Sharma were the only ones who stayed true to their game plans. And I'm including England in this because, you know, you mentioned the point about the county championship preparation. And then we've spoken before about every time Somerset produce a turning track, they get fined for it, or Essex at Chelmsford. But including the first test, England had won 6 tests in a row in Asia. And actually, on a few, not the first test of this series, but the Sri Lankan pitches for this tour and the previous tour were turning a lot more and a lot more consistently than this one was for pretty much the entire test.
The difference, I think, though, Knuckle, is that they were turning slower and they were turning, as you say, more consistently. So if you were reading the turn, you could play it. Whereas on these surfaces, it was a little bit more of a guessing game.
Yeah, it was, which is actually why I don't think that you can say that the turn was excessive. I mean, again, I don't know really. The ICC very unhelpfully only define excessive as too much, which I don't really know if that's deliveries, if that's individual deliveries turning too much or overall the ball turning.
There's a lot of wriggle room in those regulations.
Too many deliveries, too much.
There's a lot of wriggle room. When I read them, the thing I took from it was that it was supposed to be a fair battle between bat and ball, Neil. You know, a lot of people were suggesting, when I was saying it's a poor pitch, they were saying, it's the same for both sides. What are you talking about? It doesn't really matter. Well, you could put a ploughed field out there and it could be the same for both sides and it would be an awful pitch. And then people were saying, well, what's the problem with having an awful pitch? Well, the problem with having an awful pitch is you get awful matches. And the ICC regulations are there to try and steer away from that, the ploughed field mentality of just putting out a track there and having any rubbish taking wickets. And I think this pitch was borderline substandard. I think the pink ball didn't help. I think the, as Knuckles says, the unknown nature of the surface didn't help either. And I think, as Naaman would suggest, and Kush has, the poor shot selection didn't help. I think the poor shot selection was continuation of the fact that there was a poor pitch in front of people. The same for both sides argument isn't a get out from the fact that the pitch isn't good enough. You could have same for both sides, 23 plays 22, plays 31, plays 43. Equal game, probably quite an exciting game, but it lasts two sessions.
The pitch being put down as the reason for particularly England's performance in this is undone.
But I don't think it has been. Yeah, certainly.
That's certainly how it's been presented.
Well, no, I think that's how people read it. Then certainly, if you listen to the podcast yesterday and listen to, and see what I put on Twitter, I've been very careful to say.
I'm not speaking about you, James. Yeah,
but my comment yesterday, Neil, was that I came into this series expecting India to be the better side. I was expecting India to probably be the better side in all four test matches, personally. I have got a lot of my favourite players in that Indian team. As you know, I watch the IPL. There's a lot of my heroes are in that Indian side. But all I'm asking for is for England to be given the courtesy, really, of having tracks that are playable on, and for an England team. You see, it seems like to me, Neil, that India got beaten in that first game, got beaten by quite some margin. I was totally surprised by England's victory, but, you know, happy to see it. And from there on, they decided, right, let's put England on some really bad pitches that turn square. We know where they can't cope with that, and we'll get back into this series because the World Test Championship finals on the line.
I think, on the other hand, that England got an absolute road for 2 days of the first test. And then when challenged, they've consistently failed to make 200 over five innings.
Yeah.
That doesn't
answer what I've just said, though, does it? That India realised that they made a mistake with that first surface. It was too balanced.
Can I jump in on this on this point? If the ground stuff produced this pitch, I think there's a lot of, frankly, inexperience in the ground stuff for both the Chennai. There was a lot of articles actually about the Chennai ground stuff, and you know, in this pitch as well. I don't think that they were both probably below average, and I'm not actually sure how much design has gone into that. Because if the ground stuff thought that a pitch that was very spin bowler friendly would help India more than England, they've not been paying attention for 4 years. Because actually, India have built their recent home record in the last 4 years on having a very well balanced attack generally on pitches that are pretty neutral.
And I said yesterday, Knuckle, as well on Twitter, that by almost making it lowest common denominator, I actually think I could have bowled some off spin on that and maybe have the chance of taking a wicket.
Well this is precisely my point.
You're giving Root a chance to take 5 for 8, and it's taking away the fact that the Indian spinners are better, doesn't it?
It does. It also removes India's fast bowlers from the game, largely. And we had, five really good fast bowlers in Ishant Sharma, Jasprit Bumrah, James Anderson, Stuart Broad, and Jofra Archer. Almost reduced to the role of spectator in this game, which was a real shame because that's one of the things I was most looking forward to. These are all quality bowlers, and we didn't really... The pitch, I will certainly say, was well below average in terms of allowing all players to display their skill, which I think that's absolutely fair. But I don't buy the argument at all that these pitches necessarily helped India or were in the sense of how India have actually been playing for the last 4 years. And even when England toured in 2016, only really maybe Mumbai and Chennai were turning particularly, and even then only towards the end of the test match. The last time India played on a really spin friendly pitch in Pune in 2017 against Australia, they lost. And they lost because, just as you say, the bowlers with less skill than Ashwin, and in that series Jadeja, were able to be very effective. And it took the skill. It's a little bit like when England played Ireland on a pitch that was doing all sorts. You know, Tim Murtagh's a fine bowler, but he's not James Anderson as fine a bowler. It almost makes it more of a leveler. So if the plan was from the ground stuff to produce this pitch with the theory of, right, let's get India back into the series, it was a massive miscalculation and the gamble that just happens to have worked.
I think it's going to be interesting. Final point to Naaman. It's going to be interesting to see what pitch the Indian ground staff at Ahmedabad create for the fourth test match, Naaman. The World Test Championship's on the line. A draw or better gets India to Lords next summer. Will this be a road, Naaman? Will they make this one a 700 play 650 track which goes all 5 days and England never have a sniff of trying to derail India's travel plans to Lords next summer?
Not at all, James. I feel it's going to be the same, just like the second test and the third test, somewhat middle over there. But just simply expect on similar to the second and the third test, right from the first ball itself. And we included Washington Sundar as the third spinner, leaving out Kuldeep and bringing in Bumrah. That also spoke a lot because we included extra batting and also somewhat a part-time spin bowler as a backup for Ashwin. So I don't think so there is going to be any difference in the wicket for the fourth test.
It'll be really interesting to see how it goes, I think, as we go through that fourth test match. It's a series I'm really enjoying. I actually really enjoyed that third test match as much as I was hoping to. Because it didn't last very long. And yeah, just to reiterate what I was saying to Neil there, I expected India to win this series. I was really looking forward to seeing spinning tracks and seeing England put under the pump, watching Ashwin and, well, hopefully Jadeja, but obviously that never came true. And I really admire this Indian side on home soil, and I wanted to see as much of it as possible. And for it to be over in 2 days, I think is the biggest problem for me, is that that surface wasn't good enough to last. I mean, if they batted really well on it, I reckon it might have lasted into day three, maybe a little bit, but it wasn't good enough to last long enough to entertain me as much as I wanted. And that's all I want to see, really. I'm not bothered if England win. I'm not bothered if India win. I just want to see good test cricket. And that third test match track at Ahmedabad did not serve up for me good test cricket. Kush, thank you for your email. If there are any things that I've left unmentioned there, feel free to get back in touch and we'll talk about it again in the future. But thanks for taking the time to email me. Neil, Nakul and Naman, thanks for taking the time to join me as always on the Cricket Badger podcast today. I've been James, the Cricket Badger, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. We will be back every day during England's tour of India. Get in touch on @cricket_badger on Twitter. We hope you are enjoying the cricket. See you again tomorrow.
Podcast Network.